just so much transportation news. There's a lot to go through. First off, a new bike and pedestrian path connecting Riverside to San Marcos is just one of several changes planned with the widening of the Fuller-Warren Bridge. This was a project that for years was thought to be impossible to do. Now it looks as if it's actually going to happen. Meanwhile, the ride-sharing service Uber is butting heads with members of the Jacksonville City Council over its operations here in town. And at the same time, those water taxis should be up and running for tonight's preseason game at Everbank Field. All this as a consultant for Jacksport gives testimony that deepening the St. John's River will bring in more cargo ships and lots of jobs. Lots of news from the week. We're going to begin, though, with this transit discussion with all of these different elements. Give us a call right now as we discuss the Fuller-Warren plans at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. We're already getting your calls. You can go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show as well. Dan Scanlon, let's begin with you. For years, people in Riverside and San Marco have wanted this. A walk path, a bike path, a way to connect the neighborhoods over the St. John's River that doesn't involve a vehicle. And it looks as though now, in cooperation with FDOT, it might finally be happening. You covered this latest meeting about the project. Tell us what you know.
Well, back in February, there were 120 people jammed into a basement of a church in Riverside to discuss this plan, and they were very much against, in many ways, this. I mean, only in recent past, 2011, did the DOT just redo the bridge. So they're going, you've messed it up for us. It's noisier now. We can see it. We can hear it. We can feel it. You didn't put in any sound protection walls, and now you want to do more and widen, and you want to put a ramp to Roosevelt that's going to take out some homes, and we want a bike path if you're going to do this. And the DOT said, we're sorry. No bike path, we can't do that. And now the reversal comes, a bike path. And the other good news would be that they're going to dump the plan for the flyover ramp from I-10 to Roosevelt, which would obviously keep a number of homes and businesses intact. They already got some problems in San Marco with taking all of the land and property there from some folks, so at least that won't happen in Riverside. And the good news is RAM, Riverside Arts Market, will stay intact, just cross the street to a temporarily paved area while their favorite spot under the bridge next to the river is redone. So there's some pluses coming out of this, and apparently it's a few million cheaper than they proposed.
549-2937. John Burr, this goes along with the constituents clamoring to City Councilman Robin Lum in particular that they want a more walkable community.
Yeah, it's a refreshing development that, the whole bike-friendly movement in Jacksonville has been gaining strength, for years now, but that the state actually, after initially poo-pooing it, actually listened and accommodated them. That's a great thing.
And Fred Matthews, A.G. Gankarski, let's talk about what this means for the people in the neighborhoods. Pedestrian path, bike path, there will be noise-deafening walls. That's a big quality of life concern. This is all encouraging when you consider that for years, Jacksonville has been ranked near the bottom on the list that come out every year, looking at which communities are the most and least bike and pedestrian friendly. We're seen as one of the least bike and pedestrian friendly cities in America. This is a big change.
It is a big change. And for anybody who has, of course, visited the Riverside neighborhood and, of course, its cousin San Marco across the river there, you just enjoy walking and going to what's happening there. What's significant about this project here is that it's a continuation of what's already there. You can not only can you enjoy the neighborhood just walking through it, bicycling through it, but you have someplace to go. You have restaurants to go to, you have shopping to go to, you have a grocery store to go to. It's very nice, and this just accompanies that, and it shows what community activism can do.
And the North Florida TPO, full disclosure, they do underwrite this program in part. They've got to include this project on their long-term plan as well. It's part of a wider look, AG, at transportation issues for this entire region.
Right. And, ultimately, that's what it comes down to. It's not about what happens in, 2016 when construction starts. It's more about looking forward a couple of decades, anticipating needs, all of that. And, although this project, the bike path, the walking path on the Fuller-Warren is not necessarily going to solve Jacksonville's walkability crisis, it'll help connect these two urban core neighborhoods that otherwise might not have been connected quite so easily.
Well, TPO is certainly a group that pushes for ride sharing and carpooling and things like that, so I would think it would be a slam dunk for them to also approve a project that decreases traffic vehicularly and makes it biking. And then you're right. You guys are right. I mean, obviously, think the morning. You're at Ram on one end, and then you run over to Friendship Fountain for a festival on your bike, or you walk it. Mm-hmm. People are walking and biking and across bridges in major cities from Frisco to New York to D.C. Why can't we do it here on a major bridge that connects two very similar and wonderful neighborhoods?
And the number to join the show with your thoughts about this story and all the top stories of the week is 549-2937. We'll go to your calls in just a moment. And you mentioned ride sharing. Let's talk about the interesting clash that's going on right now between local ride share services, Uber and Lyft, and the traditional taxi companies. The ride-sharing services are coming under more scrutiny around the country. The yellow cab-type firms are saying they should be held to the same standards and regulations as the old-fashioned taxis. The Jacksonville City Council is now exploring stricter rules, more fines for companies like Uber and Lyft at the same time. These companies are saying that though they're disrupting the traditional mode of doing business, that's the very nature of capitalism, that this is what consumers are demanding. They want to be able to download an app and have a car instantly appear. John Burr, from a business perspective, Uber's saying, well, we'll just pay more fines if the council says we have to be fined. It's just part of the cost of doing business. What are your thoughts about this?
Well, I think the taxi industry has a good argument that they've been regulated, heavily regulated, for decades. And if these folks are essentially going to get into the business that they're in, they ought to be regulated too. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. You know, Uber is and Lyft are having these fights across the country now, and actually we're kind of late to the fight. This has been raging in other cities for a few months now, and it's a real stumbling block for these guys. I mean, they've got to figure out a way other than we'll pay the fines to answer this question.
Right, Fred.
Well, I mean, they're dealing with some serious political issues here in Jacksonville too. I mean, our local taxi service, who we all know, is also stems from a family line. Brad Braddock, who's arguing, is of course the son of Grady Braddock, who, for those of us who've been around a while, know about the taxi battles we had going on there and the criminal things that were behind it, and a lot of money that went to council members. This has not just come up. And council members are getting are basically being indicated to that they need to play ball with these guys, with the persons who donate to their campaigns and put this forth. And the council's already passed this. So why is it coming back? Because there's a push from one or two taxi companies who stand to lose big money or perceive that they do because of this. Now, but that goes in opposition to our free market attitude that we have here. So, I mean, they're coming in, they have a different game plan, a lower price, they've been approved, but all of a sudden they're gaining ground, so let's kick back. And that's what we're seeing here. The council can't just say, what is their excuse? They've already granted Uber the right to be here.
AG.
Yeah, I mean, and this kind of gets to a larger issue of taxi cab industry in general. The taxi cab industry is kind of rooted in mid-20th century logic and rhetoric, heavy regulation, all of that. In a place like Jacksonville that is so far flung, we're especially needed. We can especially use something like Uber, and we can especially use an alternative to the regulated taxi cab industry that's been politically connected, you know, as we've been talking about.
And we have calls on this, but we'll go to your calls in just one more moment at 549-2937. John?
And all that sounds great, but the first Uber ride that crashes into a storefront and kills two people because the brakes didn't work and the guy driving it had a criminal record, all this is going to come up. And that's why those regulations are in place for the taxi industry.
That's the other side of it.
You know, so
of course, Lyft has been saying on social media for years that they are a social event, that you can make a new friend with the driver. So they're trying to make this a little lighter and happier than it is. But John's right. I mean, the first time that there is a subpar car that picks up a friend, or heaven forbid, something happens and the Lyft or Uber driver committed some incident, it won't be happy. And I'm sure it's happened elsewhere. Don't forget, too, in places like New York City where you've got medallion cabs and a set number of medallions for those licensed cabs versus the gypsy cabs. This is a battle, as has been said here, has been going on for
decades. It's been going on
in other cities.
But we want your calls on this right now. 549-2937, the number to join the show. Let's go to it's the Jack's Lyft lady, as she identifies herself. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yes, this is the Jack's Lyft lady, and I've been with Lyft since they came to Jacksonville. I guess the first thing I want to say is your first guest, when you pointed to him and said, well, what do you think? He says, well, the taxis are heavily regulated, and we should heavily regulate Lyft and Uber as well. That is so anti-Jacksonville. That is not where we want to go with more regulation. We hear from you, Melissa, all the time how Jacksonville is a tech-savvy place to live. We are moving forward. You ought to know that the drivers for Lyft go through background checks. The drivers, their cars are inspected from head to toe. We meet the same standards as those taxi cabs do, with the exception of the licensing for the drivers and these huge fines and fees that you pay for medallions on taxi cabs. That's what we don't pay. We don't pay the right people. So the right hands didn't get the money in them, so that's why we're having problems.
Let me ask you, Lyft lady, how's business?
It's fabulous, Melissa. It is so awesome. The people who use technology in this city use Lyft. It is very difficult to get around Jacksonville without a car. It's just, how can you do it? And Lyft is there in a minute, and it's fabulous. People love this service.
All right, and that's the Jack's Lyft lady calling in from the South Side. She'll come pick you up if you need a ride, when she's not battling City Hall, that is. What about that, Fred?
I mean, those medallions at one point became as precious as trying to get a liquor license in this city. If you go back many years, you could not get a liquor license because only one person had a liquor license here. So everybody else could only sell beer and wine until we progressed and moved on. It's the same thing here. Now, we've already argued this battle, and we've come to a conclusion about it. But because the sight of losing money is there from the far reaches of town, Mandarin, the beaches, those who don't get great taxi service, they're having to look at Uber and Lyft as a way to get it done. They can punch it out on their cell phone, and instantly the car appears, and they pay for it. And we're not having those kind of crashes with taxis and all of that. I mean, that's interesting, but we're not having it. The taxis are having problems getting robbed and mugged and beat up. That's what they're having problems with, and their drivers are not being covered by the taxi companies. Those guys have to pay for that stuff out of their pocket.
Here's a tweet from a listener. Many times it's not a cheaper product, but a higher quality product. The taxi companies need to improve their consumer expectations. Lots of calls, meanwhile. Let's go to James on the north side. He's calling from his sailboat. Hi, James. Another mode of transit. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Hi, AJ. You remember me? I moved you.
Oh, my gosh. How you doing? Long time no talk. It's been a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I used to be a taxi driver in Jacksonville. I drove for 15 years in Jacksonville. And I can tell you right now, Jacksonville, for example, an event like the Super Bowl, there was not enough taxis in town. And I don't see anything wrong with a little bit of competition as long as Uber checks the people out that they hire. So, and I made a lot of money driving a cab, by the way.
How well did you do?
He's on a sailboat.
Yeah, well, it's true. You are calling from your sailboat, so I guess you did all right.
I bought my first sailboat driving a taxi. this is like the third or fourth since I've been here. But anyway, it's a good business, and I don't see anything wrong with competition. After all, isn't that what America is about, competition and growth and all that?
All right, that's James. James, enjoy the day on the water. Thanks for calling into the show. I'm jealous. I wish I was out there on that boat right now with James. That sounds like fun. Let's go to Ryan on the north side. The number to join us, 549-2937. Hi, Ryan. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I just wanted to make the point in this that it seems like, if I'm reading everything correctly, a lot of the problems and questions that City Council is raising with Lyft is with the Uber X service, and that Uber really has two pieces of business here. The Uber Black service that they have, those black cars that are currently signed up with Uber are regulated by the city the same way limos are. They're required to have medallions. All the drivers are required to have the for-hire driver permits from the city office down on Jesse Street. The vehicles go through the city inspection the same way limos do. I just thought that was, you know, an important distinction to make, that this is not all of Uber as a blanket, but it's just this Uber X piece that's the ride-sharing model.
Yeah, that is an important distinction, Ryan. Thank you for that call and pointing that out. Dan Scanlon.
You know, I would dare say that the reputation of taxis nationwide is that they're ex-police cars that have 100,000-plus miles on them and they're rattle traps. I would dare say that some of these Lyft and Uber cars are being personal cars, are better cars, and you probably have a much better experience riding in them, possibly even safer, because they are a private car and a person is putting their life on the line because it's their car and they're using it 24/7.
Yeah, and the number to join the show as we discuss the top stories of the week, 549-2937, even more transportation news to touch on. It appears that two water taxis will be operating at some point today on the St. John's River. After passing a U.S. Coast Guard inspection, the taxis had been shut down since early June, when the former company that was running them from the north to the south bank and back, when they closed up shop. But the Coast Guard has blessed the boats. One will carry 100 people. One will carry 50. They will be working in time for tonight's preseason Jaguars game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, kickoff at 7:30 tonight. This is something that has been a bit of a black eye for the city for a couple months now. It looks as though they finally got this, at least it partially resolved. John.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, during the games at the stadium and other events downtown, yeah, the water taxis are used. The issue from a business perspective for the water taxis is, what do you do the other 340 days of the year? They don't have riders. And, you know, that's why the other company left. We weren't making it. So it's great to have them back. And for these special events, they'll be used. But, you know, again, are they a viable business?
Is it viable? Here's a tweet, AG, from a listener. Am I missing something with this water taxi situation? I've lived here 20 years and I've never used one. It seems like a waste of money to me.
Thank you.
What about that?
Well, I mean, in principle, I agree with the listener. But in practice, I mean, part of our relationship to special events in the city over the last couple of decades is that we try to make ourselves seem a little bit bigger, a little bit more ready to deal with impacts than we have been. That's why we got the sort of ad hoc lodging that we got during the Super Bowl, for example. And we're seeing it again with the water taxis. I mean, is there a perpetual demand for them? No. But, you know, for something like a Jaguars game, for the Gator Bowl, for Florida, Georgia, a couple of other events, yeah. But, yeah, it's a paradigm for sure.
Well, can you make the argument that they should be treated like a public service? Fred, Dan, the same way that people look at public transportation like the Skyway or in bigger cities.
Why don't we do a Uber thing with boats, where everybody with a boat can, you know, have an app and, you know, pick up people on the dock and ferry them around the city.
All right. But yet yesterday the Coast Guard.
You just hit upon the next phase of your career.
That said, yesterday the Coast Guard spent hours inspecting these boats and even found, according to their 401 press release that they sent out yesterday, found some minor deficiencies such as lack of training logs and required placards on the boats. But apparently everything, including the emergency evacuation and man overboard, went fine. And then they were smart enough to bring up the fact that only, a week ago, we had one of our party boats have a boiler fire and they had to evacuate everybody.
Uh-huh.
And that company handled it beautifully and everybody was brought to dock in one piece because of evacuation. So the times that these boats are used, they better be up to snuff. I've used the River Taxis, the old company, many times, but I will tell you, the height of use is going to be between now and January for football games, those fall concerts, and the college bowl games that occur, plus whatever big activity happens at the landing. Other times, there's no reason for me to take a taxi unless I want to avoid downtown traffic, and I'll park in San Marco And even now, I can walk a bridge versus taking a water taxi for $7 less round trip.
Right. And the number to join us, 549-2937, as we discuss the top stories of the week. Speaking of the St. John's River, more debate over plans to dredge the river down to a depth of 27 feet. Yesterday, a consultant gave a presentation in town. It's the Pennsylvania-based Martin Associates, and they doubled down on their initial findings that were somewhat controversial, saying that the city will lose out on even more jobs than what they originally predicted if we do not dredge the St. John's River from its current 42-foot channel down to a depth of 47 feet. John Martin speaking before members of Mayor Alvin Brown's Port Task Force Thursday, saying that they expect many thousands of jobs, more than 100,000 jobs, $27 billion in economic output. Critics say that those numbers are inflated and that we can't be assured of success if we spend this much on the dredging. Fred Matthews, obviously the business community is very much in favor of this. So is the congressional delegation. The only sticking point at this point is how this will be paid for.
Well, I mean, it's going to be paid for by part of the tax dollars that we have here locally and what the federal government kicks in. I mean, load on the economic pluses, will you, from that press release. I mean, that just is grand. But it's going to happen. I mean, I think this is one of those issues that's going to happen. Jacksonville has long been pining for the cruise industry, and it's been pining to get these ships down to be in competition with what's happening in the Carolinas and certainly to slow Savannah down. So this is going to happen. It's just a question of waiting out the time for the money to be appropriated, and so the work can get started. I there's just the environmental argument is just not going to hold here. It's not strong enough to stop the politicians from sending the money down.
This, despite a lawsuit that's been filed on this, AG Gankarski.
Yeah, I mean, but really, it comes back to what Fred's saying. There's bipartisan support for it, you know, all levels of government. You know, there's always environmental objections, but, you know, time and again, 9 times out of 10, the environmental objections are overcome. And this time, economic utility is going to do it yet again.
And we'll go to your calls right now on this and the other biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. The number to join the show here on First Coast Connect this morning, whether you want to talk taxis, land or water taxis, the port, the Fuller Warren Bridge, and other news of the week that we are going to get to in just a moment. The number to join us, 549-2937. As we go to Brad on the north side, let's get Brad in the queue, please. All right. Hi, Brad. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Go ahead.
I just wanted to bring up a couple of things because the way the conversation is going, it sounds as if the city is just out for money in regard to the permit and medallions. And one thing I want to correct about that, Jacksonville has had an open market as far as the medallions for vehicles for hire for as long as I've been in the business, and I've been in the business for over 30 years. So there's not a lock on the medallions. There's not a cap on the number of them. Anyone with a legitimate business can go in and get permits for vehicles for hire. So it's not a matter of a monopoly or there being a cap on medallions. The other thing that I wanted to bring up that is extremely important is the fact that the insurance coverage with these app companies that are like Lyft and like Uber and Sidecar, is their insurance policies have several loopholes in them. And the public needs to understand the risks that are involved. If a person comes out of a nightclub or a restaurant or from the stadium or a concert and they hop into one of these cars and they have not used the app, then Uber's insurance will not cover them. Neither will Lyft. The passengers have to use the app in order to be covered for the insurance. These vehicles are not permitted to pick up hails, what's called hails or flags, off the streets. That's in the city regulations. But that's what these companies are doing. And that's what's got the taxi services and legitimate vehicle for hire companies upset. Is they're taking this type of business away from companies who have to pay city fees, who have to pay taxes, who have to have the proper insurance, 24/7 insurance coverage, and all the other things that go along with running a bricks and mortar type business. These companies don't have to do that, but yet they're coming in and taking the business that that the taxi services are do provide.
And that's and that's Brad on the north side. Thank you for that call, Brad. Appreciate it.
Well, that's the same argument, of course, that we had with other internet companies. They don't play pay state taxes. The customers don't have to pay sales tax, and they're not anchored here, and we don't have this. Look, those things can be dealt with legislation that you simply get somebody to sponsor, if that's your concern. Get somebody to sponsor it, move the legislation through the council, and close the loopholes. We don't do it by making a public fuss about
it. That's called regulation, Fred. Well, I thought you didn't like regulation.
No, I didn't. I didn't say that. I didn't. I'm saying how to pass legislation to get the council to pass it. I mean, okay. this is not about trying to get the council to pass legislation. This is trying to get the council to undo what they did and run these people out of town. Remember now, there's only, two cities in the state of Florida where Uber's operating.
And we're one of them.
And we're one of them. And we need to stop this. I mean, you know.
Let's go to John on the south side. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Sorry, I'm getting in late on this.
That's okay. But,
I just wanted to jump in real quick with the water taxes. And just, you know, when you talk about legislation, I just caught the end of where Dan was talking about, you know, the seating requirements and how it was reduced, and there are different peak times. But what I want everyone to really recognize, or hope to recognize, is that with the water taxis or just any waterborne transportation, think of the little guys. You know, right now we have this new DRA-DIA zone, which is going to have the authority over 4.8 miles of waterfront from the Fort Warren to the Matthews Bridge. Right now what's taking place are 10-year no-compete clauses on these taxpayer-subsidized docks, piers, and kayak launches. So to maintain a real sustainable and vibrant downtown, there needs to be legislation, you know, created, and that can happen now before the city council votes on the CRA, which is a master plan. And, you know, I just wanted to, you know, kind of throw that out there. I know it's a lot, but, you know, create an opportunity for the little guy, you know, not just these big, you know, 100-vessel competitors.
All right. And that's John on the south side. Thanks for that call. Lots of folks waiting on hold, but we do need to discuss a few other headlines from the week. This is from the Business Journal. The city of Jacksonville so excited about the possibility of a Fortune 500 company setting up shop here that they've created a brand new incentive. Part of the $10 million package that will be proposed to the council is a $400 per job payment that would be made to this as yet unnamed company. From 2015 to 2030, critics might call that a sweetheart deal, John Burr, but city leaders say this is just a way to bring more jobs to town. Your thoughts?
Well, it's being framed as, you know, without this, we don't get the jobs type of deal. So, you know, without the $400 per job payment, we wouldn't be in the running to get this factory from a Fortune 500 company. So we're going to pay it, and if we do, they accept it. So you know, this is part of you know, just what every city is going through these days. You got to incentivize your city to make these big job producers come to your city.
Dan Scanlon.
The only question I've got is if we do approve these incentives and some money starts flowing, and then, as has happened in the past, the economy goes south or whatever, the company says, on second thought, no, do we lose any money? Does the city of Jacksonville lose some incentive that goes out, or is there a return clause or a play-safe clause?
Well, the clawbacks are a very important part of all these incentives, and the city has been criticized in the past for not really enforcing the clawbacks. And what a clawback is, you know, hey, if you didn't meet the terms of the agreement, Mr. Capitalist, you know, you owe the city some money back.
And they've never really collected on those. Right?
Not aggressively. I wouldn't say never, but a lot have slipped through the net. Yeah.
Well, with this one, you see that it's a prorated payment over a course of 15 years. That's one point in the favor of this plan. Another point in favor of this plan is the fact that, you know, this payment per job is much less than you see, you know, in other parts of the South for BMW, Boeing, other corporate relocations. So as, you know, corporate job incentive plans go, this is actually a really good deal, at least on its face.
Let's go to Mark on the West Side. Hi, Mark. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. I would say that, you know, passing the human rights ordinance would be better than bribing people to bring jobs here.
You see it as a bribe?
Yes.
Thanks for the call, Mark. Fred Matthews.
Who's the company?
We don't know yet. They're not
Who's
saying.
Who's the company? I mean, don't we operate in the sunshine in this state? Who's the company? Now, we got a quick close. We have a quick closing fund that the state's giving of $2.5 million. We're going to give them, as you say, $400 a job. I mean, who's the company? The city council is going to approve this without telling the taxpayers who they're giving their money to because it's such a big deal. Who's the company? The state of New York, I think, gives you 10 years, gives any company that moves there 10 years of no taxes.
Right.
And you could just go there and set up shop. You don't have to worry about taxes. Who's the company? I think that's the only thing, I won't say it's wrong, but it's the only thing missing from this deal. And we've got to be clear with everybody on what we're doing. Going after jobs is one thing, but we need to always be transparent, they tell me, about what we do and who we're giving money to. Again, Berkman Plaza, two, sitting there. Then we give some money to that or give them a deal or something for that, and we have to sue them, and it collapsed, and here we are. Who is the company? That's what's missing from this deal, and I think we need to be transparent here. If the city council is going to pass this, which I assume they are, I mean, it's a sweet deal, without telling somebody should stand there and ask who is the company before they take the vote.
They are going to consider this without the business's name being disclosed.
But yet, City Council Finance Committee Chairman Richard Clark says in our Times Union story about this that it makes it easier if it's anonymous. In fact, his exact words, I would hope that we would have 10 more of these that are large enough and sensitive enough that we code name them all the way through, saying it's not necessary for the council to decide on the incentives by having a name.
Of course it makes it easier. It makes it easier because then whoever the company is, you don't have, if they have a reputation, if they're, you know, if they're selling black diamonds in South Africa, you don't have to bring that up. Nothing about them gets disclosed until after the deal is done. Of course it makes it easier. But we already have the incentives in place. That's why we did it under the old Downtown Development Authority. We do it under this new Development Authority. The incentives are there. The leeway is there. Nothing's going to change, except that we will at least know who we're giving money to.
And they would argue that other cities, upon learning the name, would then start trying to hook these companies
in. Try to grab it away.
It's called competition.
I understand.
We do have a sunshine law in Florida. We also have an exemption to the sunshine law, which allows companies to keep their name private in these types of
as has been stated economic, in the stories, yeah.
economic development situations. Is that right? I don't think so. I agree with Fred. I think if city money or state money is being put forth before that decision is made, people have a right to know which corporation is getting. Not just it's a Fortune 500 company. That's not good enough. And I disagree with Councilman Clark on that.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I'm just stating what is on the record.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's fine. I understand.
And speaking of transparency, is the Florida House living up to its pledge of doing that as they came up this week with a new map aimed at fixing Florida's broken congressional districts? They've been declared invalid by a judge. Judge Terry Lewis ordered lawmakers last week to throw out two of the state's 27 districts and redraw the lines. The new map would revise the district boundaries for our own North Florida Congresswoman, Corrine Brown. Meanwhile, a new study finds Florida is actually the third most gerrymandered large state in America, coming in only behind Pennsylvania and Ohio in what critics say are improperly drawn lines to benefit one political party or the other. So I had a look at the revised district for Corrine Brown. It reduces the number of African-American voters, and it pulls out a lot of Central Florida, particularly the town of Sanford, from her district. But it gives her more voters in Putnam County. So instead of it being a north-south district, it's more of an east-west district. We'll have to see how this plays out. AG.
Yeah, I mean, on the surface, it sounds like an improvement. You know, we'll see what it looks like, you know, practically. But, you know, really what we're dealing with is an issue of gerrymandering that is institutional. It's something that both parties partake in, both parties benefit from. And, you know, this is the resistance that we see to it. And I think that no matter what redistricting happens, we're going to have to revisit the issue again sooner than later.
Well, this I've seen some of the proposed maps, and it eliminates those Rorschach test type congressional districts, of which Corrine Brown's is one. And, you know, that's an improvement. I understand the bigger argument about, you know, having minority representation in Congress versus, you know, diluting the chances of that happening. But, you know, it's illegal to gerrymander. And you know,
it's not
that's the beginning and the end of the conversation.
It's illegal,
right,
but it hasn't stopped the process in our state or in many
others.
But
the voters of Florida have spoken, and they don't want this. And that's why this lawsuit has come about. That's why this judge's decision has come about. And it's happening.
And I've not heard any complaints from those people affected. Certainly no press releases that I looked at as of this morning. So I would guess they're accepted right now as they go for final vote and implementation before elections.
Yeah, we'll have to see if a special election is even called. Fred Matthews, the judge, has still reserved the right to do that.
Yeah, it's a little too early to judge from those who are affected, because unlike us, they haven't looked at any maps. They aren't even aware of any maps exist, but
That's
they
right.
do almost automatically. I mean, yes, it's going to happen. The supervisors of elections around the state are already looking at this, and they're saying, well, look, you know, I don't think we can get this done. We've already sent out absentee ballots. The military folks overseas have already gotten theirs. So there's some problems with trying to get this done for this fall's election. But, yeah, I mean, the district is going to be redrawn. I mean, we're just halfway through the decade, and we've got five more years before we have to do it all over again. So it's going to get done, but it's just a question of this year whether or not it's going to affect this fall's election, or it's going to have to move to next year, and they have a special election next year for these congressional seats.
Wow, another HBO movie on Florida's elections.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
you could play a reporter again.
Hey, they only paid scale, but it was fun. Now, the Jags preseason starts tonight with a home game against Tampa Bay. We talked about that a minute ago. Meanwhile, Jacksonville's own Tim Tebow says he's still in training for that elusive NFL opportunity. If you can't get enough of Tebow, you can catch him in just a few more days as he debuts as a football analyst for ESPN's new SEC Network. That debuts August 14th. AG, your thoughts?
Well,
our sports columnist.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's another year, another Tebow story. I mean, the problem with Tebow is that, you know, whatever skill set he had is clearly eroded. You saw it last year in the Patriots preseason game where, you know, Tebow completed about a third of his passes. And, you know, he hasn't been wanting to move to another position. He hasn't wanted to move to Canada to play. He wants to be an NFL quarterback, but he lacks the NFL quarterback skill set. My advice to Tim Tebow would be to work on your commentary skills, because that's your future.
Well, he certainly would have a bright future doing that. Would be very popular, well compensated. That's a good career.
Yeah, it's a good career. It's not the career that he prefers. And, I agree with AG. I mean, Tim Tebow's train has left the station, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. If he really wants to play football, what he needs to do is go to the Arena League, or go to Canada, or go to Europe, one of those leagues, and give it his best shot. And if he just lights it up, you know, that then maybe he'll get his shot. But just to sit around and go to the gym and lift weights and hope somebody calls, that ain't going to work.
He's only 26, we need to point out. He's still so young.
But only 26 in professional football
is getting up in years.
Exactly. You know.
Yeah.